gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the central bank digital currency of free speech. No. It is the gold standard of free speech. Yeah, okay. Never mind what I said before. Never mind. It didn't happen. Those words never came out of my mouth. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators will be standing by. Okay, today we have with us Philbert. Philbert, welcome to the show.
Howdy. Glad to be here.
Howdy doody. Well, it's good to have you here. So we can start off. This is the day. Well, actually, when this is broadcast, it will be the day of the New Hampshire primary. People will be voting. Maybe the horse race is over now. You had on Monday of last week in Iowa, you had a caucus, and immediately following the caucus, Vivek Ramaswamy, he quit the race, the young Indian man, but I guess he was born here, and he endorsed Trump. And he'd always been pretty pro-Trump all along. I think all he was trying to do with this was raise his profile and get a job in the administration. And he probably succeeded in that, perhaps. And then yesterday, the second place finisher, who was Ron DeSantis, he dropped out and he endorsed Trump and bashed Nikki Haley. The only person left, the only two people left in the Republican primaries at this point, other than maybe people who you've never heard of and aren't important, is Donald Trump and Nimrata Haley, Nikki Haley. Nikki is actually her real name. It's Nimrod. That's her middle name, Nimrata Nikki Haley. And we'll see. I mean, Nikki Haley invested an awful lot in advertisements in New Hampshire. And when I say she invested an awful lot, I mean the Jews invested an awful lot in or maybe not the Jews, but Jews invested a lot in advertisement in New Hampshire. So she may come up with, 30 or 40% as much. I don't know. But Trump's going to get all the rest. It'll be a big victory. And then the next main contest is in South Carolina, Nikki Haley's home state. And it looks like she's going to be spanked. Can you say that? Or is that sexist? But I think she's going to be spanked. And who knows? But at any rate, it's a little bit of a long introduction, but I saw a speech that Trump made on Saturday night in New Hampshire. There's a lot in it, but one thing that was in it was he said, when I'm elected, when I'm back in the White House, there will be no central bank digital currency. So what do you make of that, Philbert?
Yeah, the good old CBDCs is what they're called.
CBGBs?
Yeah. They gave me the CBGBs, yeah. Well, there's a journalist named Whitney Webb out of Chile in South America. She's actually from America, but she moved down there. And she runs a site called The Unlimited Hangout. And she writes a lot about financial terror, that the elites use against us, and that's something she writes a lot about. I'm not an expert on this, but I would encourage anybody to look up her, Whitney Webb, and she dives into that quite a bit. But I mean, one could argue that we already have them; they're already here. Something I learned is that the DOJ, when they confiscate somebody's bitcoins because say that they claim that you were using them illegally or you used a mixer or something that they didn't like, they don't often, they used to auction them off like a long time ago, but now they don't do that anymore. And they're claiming a lot of Bitcoin, and it's could be theorized. We don't know, but it could be theorized that, they want to make Bitcoin that once they own a great majority of it. But I don't know, that's just speculation on my part. So, but yeah, I think not having CBDCs is a good thing. It's just a way to ultimately rationalize. And I guess when I say rationalize, I would mean like food rations. It's a way to rationalize substance to people, right? Like you can control how much people consume in a sense and what they spend it on as well.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be through a central bank digital currency. That's one way, I suppose, of doing it. But if do you remember COVID-19?
No. Well, by the way, before you get into what you were just going to say, I'd ask you if I've been following the World Economic Forum. They just had their big shindig in Davos, and they've been warning everybody to prepare for something called Disease X, right? And I don't think it's going to be called Disease X, but it does seem like they're priming the world for another go around at these lockdowns
Yeah.
and disease virus panic. I mean, it worked once. Why wouldn't they try it again, you know?
Indeed. Well, I think it is coming back. I think it's already coming back. I went to physical therapy for my aches and pains, and I walked in at right after, January 2nd or whatever it was, and the receptionist greets me. She's wearing a mask. Well, I think she's always worn a mask. I don't know if I've ever seen her face, but she's handing a mask to me, and I said, oh no, we're not going through this again. And so I've refused to wear it, and they won't let me in the main part of the facility, but they will, the therapist will treat me in a like a private room, so I don't set a bad example for other people. But yeah, I think they are. I think they, whoever they are, I think it is being brought back. And Disease X. I don't know. Okay, here's one other thing. Ron DeSantis, in his speech announcing that he was withdrawing from the race, and I think these presidential races. I think their presidential campaigns are very interesting. They're the vehicles for a lot of communication. They're the vehicles for political movements. And you can say elections are fake. And even if elections are fake, the campaigns are real. And I mean, real in that they are a vehicle for all sorts of things, for debate, for disseminating information. But Ron DeSantis, in withdrawing from the race and endorsing Trump and trashing Slutty Haley. Did I say Slutty Haley? I meant Nikki Haley. In trashing her, he did criticize Trump. He criticized Trump for the vaccine mandate and for which actually I don't know if Trump ever had any mandate himself, but he did preside over the country while that stuff was going on. And for promoting Fauci, or he didn't fire Fauci.
Yeah.
He fired Michael Flynn. He didn't fire Fauci.
And
So,
who was that guy from the FBI? He fired him.
oh yeah, he fired Comey. And Trump, in his speech on Saturday night, was bragging about what a great job he did draining the swamp, and he fired Comey. Trump, I've never heard him mention that he fired Victoria Nuland on the first day, but he did. He fired her on an inauguration day. I remember being in Washington on inauguration day and hearing about it and thinking, this is going to be so great. And it's like if you're watching a football game and they like there's a kickoff and the guy receives it and runs it back for a touchdown, and you think, oh, this is going to be so great, but they wind up losing by a score of 57-6. So it just went downhill pretty fast. Are you seeing what signs are you seeing of the disease X or COVID or things being brought back?
I saw some, well, the like I said, the World Economic Forum is shouting about it in their little get-togethers that they have. And one thing I saw, which was I thought was kind of funny, they're almost killing that phrase, killing two birds with one stone. They're saying that since global warming is happening, or the climate change is happening, that the ice in Siberia has certain viruses in it that, that we can't handle. And since we have to stop the globe from warming, so the ice doesn't melt and release all these nasty viruses in Siberia, which I thought was almost kind of comical. I mean, it's I don't know. I don't know if there's any validity to that or whatever, but I immediately thought they're trying to kill two birds with one stone.
I'll comment on that in a second. But where are we? I had mentioned COVID-19 in the first place because we were talking about the central bank digital currencies, which can be used as a means of controlling what people can buy and sell. But of course, during the COVID, during the corona apocalypse, you had the vaccine passport, for instance. And the vaccine passport required the infrastructure for allowing people to gain entrance or be able to make transactions based on their level of compliance. So in this case, it was compliance with having taken a shot, but it could be compliance with anything. And so if, in different places, you had different things. I remember going to Chicago and I wanted to eat in Chinatown. And I tell you, like as much of a shill for the Chinks as I am, these people running the restaurants in Chicago should all be deported because they wouldn't let me in for that nice Chinese food unless I took the jab mandated by the that space alien Negro lady who was the mayor at the time. And they should all be deported. But anyway, in other
You
places, like
probably can speak Mandarin, at least a little bit of it,
I'll do my best. But
right?
in Quebec, in Canada, you couldn't go into grocery stores. At least in some parts, you couldn't go into grocery stores without the QR code showing it on your phone. In Slovenia, you couldn't buy gasoline without the QR code. There are all these things. They really put together the infrastructure of a totalitarian police state, and that was without a central bank digital currency. So there's all sorts of things. And plus, even without the QR codes, even without the central bank digital currency, look how many people are getting deplatformed. Look at how the FBI was able to track down the January 6th people by going to the telecom companies or the credit card companies and saying, tell us who had a transaction or who had a communication on nearby the Capitol. So there's already, even without,
That's pretty scary how they've been, and they've been able to hold them without trial too, quite a bit of them.
And I don't remember, did Trump mention them very much? He might have mentioned them, but of course, the thing about Trump, and this is RBN, so some people are of the opinion that Trump was in on it all along. Personally, I think that Trump, for a self-absorbed narcissist, I think he had reasonably good intentions. For somebody with like a complete narcissist, he had reasonably good intentions because I think he saw his self-interest and America's self-interest as having a certain amount of overlap. And so he was willing to push for, America or white people's self-interest to the extent that it overlapped with his own self-interest. But I think he was very inept. I think there's a possibility he's learned some things, and I think there's a possibility that if he gets back in the White House, he will be less inept and perhaps somewhat more effective. You know, I don't think we should have huge expectations, but I don't know. That's what I think. What do you think?
About expectations?
About expectations, about Trump, or about whatever.
My thoughts on this is basically they're all kosher candidates. Now, you could say, yeah, he's a lesser of two evils, and I would actually agree as to whether, you know, your vote's going to work. Well, look how that worked in 2021, you know, or I mean, I'm sorry, 2020. You know, I'm of the belief he probably did win in 2020, and there was a bunch of shenanigans. You know, it's called election day, not election week. But aside from that, you could take that or leave that. But even if you leave that and you say, well, whatever, but I'm still going to vote, think about it this way, or I do at least. Having this thought that, like, oh, if we can only get the right person in office, right, then everything will go away. It seems, or not everything will go away, but, oh, you know, we can drain the swamp and everything will, you know, slowly get better. And this thought of, like, what's the only thing missing is that having the right person in the office, I think that's the wrong way to go about it. Mm-hmm. And I probably because, in a sense, we've been conditioned to think that way, you know, through like superhero movies, right? Like, oh, one superhero comes in and saves the day, you know, and saves the world. And it's just not how the world works, really. And secondly, I would add to that you, if that thought of trying to get the right person in office and everything will be better or start to change, that thought is almost like, to me, having to ask permission to get your country back. And the people that have largely taken over, you know, They're not dumb, for one. They're not, people like to say they're inept or they're omnipotent or not. No, that's not the word I meant to say. Negligent and everything. Well, they're not, like, they're smart. They know what they're doing, and otherwise they wouldn't be in power collectively, you know. So to me, that attitude is almost thinking like, well, you have to ask permission to get your country back. And I mean, like I said, they're not going to give it up easily. And I'm not trying to call for armed revolution either. I don't even think that would work. What I'm trying to get at is everybody needs to slowly be more involved. And what you can do immediately is start to talk about the problems. And to me, you know, I sound like a broken record, I'm sure, but, you know, Jewish power is the largest enemy to white people in North America right now, and Europe. You know, our number one issue is our unparalleled, unchecked third world immigration and the anti-whiteness, you know, the war on white people. And everybody sees this, you know, a lot of white people will see this and they think just voting Republican will do something about it. That's not true. Once everybody's kind of on the same page, then I think things will slowly start to change. But, you know, these Jews have been able to hide their power for a long time. And that's like Galan Osman says, or he says this, but he didn't come up with it. What do they say the secret to Jewish power is? The fact that you can't talk about it or something like that.
Yeah, the essence of Jewish power is the ability to stifle the discussion of Jewish power, something like that.
Yeah, and that's true. That's true. So I think personally, no matter what people say, you know, they can call you names or whatever, but you gotta have thick skin. Like, you can't, like, we're either gonna, you know, be called racist or go extinct, you know. Well, which is it, right? We're gonna be called racist anyway. I mean, what do they say? Our silence is violence, our speech is violence, right? So, like, we're gonna be called names either way around. And for the people that, you know, don't want to be called names, or, you know, I don't want to lose my friends, you know, it's like, well, we're gonna go extinct, right? And you're going to be hated either way around, so you might as well just tell the truth, you know. So that's my long-winded reply on voting.
Well, that's right. Now, does that mean you won't vote?
I don't know. Well, you know, voting for the local stuff probably doesn't hurt, and that's probably more important. So, but as far as the presidential election, I just can't see how. Now, I may vote for Trump. I don't know what I'll do, honestly, but I just don't see stuff changing, unfortunately.
Gilad Osman, says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQRS. This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What?
Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, you know. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1 ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10 ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
The local stuff probably doesn't hurt, and that's probably more important. So, but as far as the presidential election, I just can't see how. Now, I may vote for Trump. I don't know what I'll do, honestly, but I just don't see stuff changing, unfortunately, in our favor very much if he gets into office. I could be wrong. I'll very well admit that. I could be wrong, and I guess we'll see.
Okay. Well, I mean, the way I look at it is voting does something, but how much does it do? I mean, the question isn't – everything's not black and white. I think that the elections put people into office. The people who are getting into office and who are likely to get into office range from mediocre at best to really horrible. And yeah, there aren't saviors out there. It's not as if we can elect the savior. I certainly agree with a lot of people, but at the same time, the elected officials are able to create an environment, and some elected officials are going to create an environment that's more harmful to us than others. There's certain environments that provide better opportunities for us to do the other things. And the other things, like you said, the other thing isn't like, shooting, or like violence and that type of thing. But being able to, a lot really happens just when people talk about things. I mean, Kanye West.
Right. And look at the power. Look at the power the media has. I mean, you could argue that they have more power over lawmakers, and that's because they control the daily lexicon of the public in a way.
Yeah, they look at the power they have, and they don't have it with guns, and they don't have it with official offices. And, you know, these are big businesses, but even if they don't have money, they even some of these. Oh, gosh. William Crystal, who he had a magazine called The Weekly Standard. The Weekly Standard, which went bankrupt, it was still influential, even without money. It was still influential. So, yeah, I mean, the media is a very good example. By the way, before we forget, you mentioned something about the ice in Siberia thawing and releasing viruses. So here's the thing. The thawing of the permafrost in Siberia can it can surrender like a baby mastodon. There's a baby mastodon who fell into a pit or something and got frozen, and then because of a certain amount of thawing out, it was discovered, and you know, they're trying to see if they can get some DNA from it. And so I suppose plausibly, a virus or something that had been frozen, like viruses, because they're kind of only like marginally life forms. I mean, depending on your definition of life, they may fit in or they may fit out. They're basically just strands of RNA, or I guess some are strands of DNA that require other organisms in order to replicate themselves, but they're extremely simple, and so maybe it can be in effect in a suspended state for thousands of years, but and maybe whatever immunity we might have had to some sort of pathogen, we. Over the tens of thousands of years, maybe we've lost it. But here's my response to it. Like, so what? And if this type of thing happens, I mean, it's the type of thing that wouldn't be brand new. I mean, you do have warming and cooling. And if you're going to have warming, you have warming and cooling cycles all the time. If you're going to have warming, this type of thing could happen anytime. And in terms of being a source of new pathogens, we've got what are we at 8 billion people. We've got 8 billion people, all these mutations.
We sort of need a culling, don't we?
Yeah, we need a culling, but I mean, with 8 billion people, 8 billion potential hosts for viruses or other organisms, pathogens that are mutating, a stray frozen baby mammoth in Siberia, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket. So it is just fear-mongering. It's bringing up this stuff, and we got to be on guard. But unfortunately, there's a ton of people out there who want to be good people. They want to be good, and wearing masks and cooperating with mandates and kvetching about the climate and all sorts of things like that, it makes them feel better because they're good.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I mean, our kind, you know, white Europeans and white European Americans had historically, you know, high trust societies because we were largely homogenous. And I mean, you could say that was one weakness. I don't think, you know, trusting your neighbor is a bad thing if they're trustworthy, but you know, one should definitely realize that it's this high trust society we're used to has been weaponized.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Largely homogenous. And I mean, that was, you could say that was one weakness. I don't think, you know, trusting your neighbor is a bad thing if they're trustworthy, but, you know, one should definitely realize that it's this high trust society we're used to has been weaponized. And that's one way that they get everybody to obey. And that's another way they get everybody to self-police, right? Or, oh, I better not say that. You know, that's anti-Semitic. I don't want to be branded as that, or that's racist. Or, you know, yeah, oh, everybody else is wearing a mask. I better do that too. And these are traits that we've developed, you know, from being in a high trust tribe or society, you know. And we didn't, you know, when we were hunter gatherers, you know, it was, if you got kicked out of the tribe, it meant death, you know. So this is something that's being weaponized, and it'll do a person good to realize this, you know. And it's harder to manipulate somebody with that when they can see that what's happening.
So Kevin McDonald, so, you know, we're high trust society. Kevin McDonald.
Yes. He's a very, very smart guy. I'm a big fan of his. He's a very smart fellow.
A very smart guy. And so when he comes up with some new ideas, like, okay, it's worth thinking about. Or so he wrote a book, and I guess his most recent book, and it's on the origins of the European people. I don't remember what it's called. It's
I'll have to check it out. I love his books.
Well, let me see. It should be on my shelf somewhere. But let's see, do I have it? I don't see it. But at any rate, what is that? That's not it either. Okay. At any rate, Kevin McDonald, he says that, say, Northern Europeans, people who are ancestors, well, they had a high trust society. There was a kind of openness to it. And outsiders from time to time might come in, and people were promoted. It was pretty meritocracy, if that's the word. And if somebody was a good leader, a good military leader, for instance, that they could rise high. And that this is kind of a weakness because, you know, while we're a high trust society, we weren't quite as insular and we didn't have the same barriers to entry that, say, Middle Eastern societies tend to have. And I'm sure he could explain it better. And, you know, how significant is this? I don't know. But like I say, he's a smart guy. So it's worth considering. And that you know, that trait among us is being taken advantage of, right? So by the Jewish powers, that we are less ethnocentric than lots of other groups. And that's been weaponized against us. So I'm just
another thing I would add is something Revelo P. Oliver has written about is some of the weaknesses that we have. Because, I mean, and at the end of the day, we do bear some responsibility as to why we, you know, live in this hellhole. I'm not saying on an individual basis, but collectively, you know, we do have weaknesses that need to be addressed if we're to, you know, have any hope of fixing this. And it may be too late. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to wait for a total collapse. But one thing he was, Revelo P. Oliver was writing about that I found interesting is that we whites tend to have this view of like things, like even if you're in competition, like things have to be fair, right? Like, so we both have to, we can't have too strong of this or that. Like even in war, like war has to be fair. You know, like we used to line up and, you know, shoot each other's armies, you know, like the Revolutionary War and such. I'm not sure what that battle, like that military style was called. You know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. But
yeah, I don't know what it's called, but this was typical military it's a way that they're it tends to minimize civilian casualties for one thing.
Yeah.
You know, you had for centuries armies trekking over Europe, and the peasantry wasn't really much affected. You know, depending on who won the war, peasantry, they might be paying taxes or tributes to this prince or to that prince, but they weren't that much affected. They weren't being drafted into armies.
Well, anyway, I guess what I'm trying to get at is the Jews, and this is written in Judaism all over the place, but like they don't believe everything has to be fair. I mean, if everything was fair and we were both on equal ground, they would lose, and everybody knows it, right? So like they have to not play fair. And you know, if you're at war with somebody, you know, like I said earlier, it's either be called names or go extinct. You know, I mean, what are you going to choose? And you're going to be called names anyway. But that's another weakness that needs to be addressed. You know, is everything has to be fair. You know, and that's something especially you see in lots of liberals. You know, they want everything to be fair for the blacks and you know like what is it the new buzzword equity, right? Like you started off with more, so like you're going to get more. You know. Anyway, I got his book up here. Is it called Individualism and the Western Liberal Tradition by Kevin McDonald?
Yeah. There you go. That's it.
Yeah, I think I'll be ordering that. I'm a big fan of his. I love his work.
Yeah, yeah. Our one of our premier scholars, perhaps the premier academic scholar we've got, certainly way up there. So Dr. Duke, who's also a he's a scholar, but he's also kind of like a political leader type, not a pure academic. But he sent me a speech by Chris Hedges, who used to be a war correspondent for the New York Times. And yeah, I think
he's done a lot of work on the intelligence agencies.
Yeah, he's done a lot of reporting. He was a journalist, a professional journalist. He's done a lot on, and he's a good writer, and he's a pretty powerful speaker. So he sent me this, and I know he's played part of it on one of his shows. And he's talking about war, and I don't know if, like, some years ago, did he write a book called something like "War Is the Force That Gives Us Meaning," but he's very, very critical of war. He's kind of an old-fashioned lefty peace guy, which is good, and that's kind of where I come from, and I know a lot of people like him. But at the same time, there was something really, really lacking. And these people, like Chris Hedges and a lot of other people I've known like that, they kind of thrive off a righteous indignation. And, you know, to be have righteous indignation, you got to be mad at something. Mad at something for creating a problem. And the problem is war. And you know, well, war is a big problem. And you can look at all the victims. But, you know, in his analysis, he talked about, well, there are victims, but not all victims are the same. There are righteous victims and then non-righteous victims. Is that what he called? No, worthy victims and non-worthy victims. And, you know, in the course of laying this all out, he said that, like, in general, the worthy victims are white, right? And he injects this, like, white supremacy into it. And this is the thing. So, this gets back to the same thing that I was saying before, or we were saying before about, like, it feels good. It feels good to be good, to wear the mask, and to care about your neighbor so you get the jab. You know, you're good. And
yeah, like paying bills, like you get a little dopamine hit every time you pay your bills. Like, oh, okay, well, I did something good.
Oh, yeah, no. I once I had some guy come over, and he was trying to sell me. It was really some BS, but it was, you know, I don't know what it was. It was like to pay off my bills, or I don't know what it was. He said, what are your financial goals? And I said, my financial goals are paying my bills. That's what my financial goals are. But it was some sort of scam he was trying to sell me. At any rate, so if you are you're a truth teller and you're not afraid to criticize your own people, this is white supremacy, they are these poor, I'm standing up for the victims, the worthy victims who don't look like me. I'm so good that I am altruistic and I'm sticking up for people who don't look like me. Well, okay, if that's really the case, it's one thing. But it's not the case. It's the case is that it's not white people who are doing these wars for the military industrial complex. It's Jews who are doing it. And in so many cases, the least worthy of the victims are the whites, you know, like the East Palestine, Ohio, right, where you had that big massive spill. Who cared about them? Nobody, right? What about Flint, Michigan, where the blacks had to drink dirty water? Oh, this is racism. So Flint, Michigan, they make movies out of that. But the whites in East Palestine, Ohio, no, nobody really cared about that. You could say that, but I mean, it's like Chris Hedges is basically throwing white people under the bus for the crimes of the Jews. And Chris Hedges, Chris, I'm talking to you. Really? Think about it. Can you have righteous indignation at these people? You're really missing the point. And if you're not, I know, like, if you were talking about the Jews, then you wouldn't be on YouTube anymore. But what's more important?
Yeah, I would say not being called names. That seems to be, for most people, what's more important.
Not being called certain names.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This term you use, righteous indignation, I kind of like that. my immediate thought when you said that is, well, you've seen people that do these videos, like you can go to like if they have a gathering, these leftist liberal types, you can, there's been journalists that ask them, are you pro refugee? And they'll always say yes. And they ask, well, would you let one into your house? And all of them say no, right? Like, so they it's almost this psychological thing, like, oh, they need to be here, but not in my home, right? They need to destroy my enemy, right? As long as we can send them to the enemy's houses in the enemy's neighborhood. It's almost like this righteous indignation, like you said. I kind of like that term.
Yeah. Regarding refugees in your house, over 50 years ago, there was a British, what would you call it, a soap opera? I guess you'd call it a soap opera, called Upstairs, Downstairs. And I quite liked it. And it was about a upper class family that lived there. You know, they were kind of politically connected. I guess the father of the family was a member of parliament. The mother was the one who actually had the money. The father had married into money, and that's how he supported his political career. And it took place in, I guess it started off like in the very early 1900s, around 1902 or so. And it continued to, I guess, the start of the Great Depression. So it went over the course of about 26, 27 years. And it included World War One. And so when World War One happened, the upper-class families in London, the high-society families in London, they all wanted to have a refugee. They wanted to have the Belgian refugees. They wanted to take in refugees from Belgium, right? And so this family got their refugees, and they were very excited. Well, then they found out that the refugees that they got were peasants, and they had lice, and the kid misbehaved. And they go, oh my goodness, we'll have to keep them downstairs with the servants. The servants
almost sounds like a Monty Python skit.
Well, I know, but and the thing is, so. This was made 50 years ago, and the events that they were talking about, I guess a little, that would be maybe another 50 or 60 years. We can probably recreate a lot of what happened 50 years ago. So I have the feeling that this was probably pretty accurate. But yeah, the refugees are fine until they bring in head lice or rape your daughter or steal from you or murder you in your sleep.
Yeah, or steal your sovereign from your country's sovereign wealth fund, you know, or take all the welfare, you know, that otherwise would be spent on people of your own kind that need it.
Yeah. Well, it would be spent. Not, well, I mean, some of it would be spent on people of our own kind. It's not like, not as if all whites are hardworking, got everything together. Right.
And we don't have a sovereign wealth fund. Some I think Norway does. But anyway, that's tie the point, I guess.
Anyway, so okay, so I was criticizing Chris Hedges and others who are truth tellers. They're truth tellers, and they speak truth to power, except that they won't actually name the real power. They won't name the Jewish power, and instead they'll blame it on white people or the military industrial complex or corporations or whatever. You know, there's something else. Who can we blame the crimes of the Jews on? Now, having said that, I do want to say that it's not as if all our problems come from Jews, and it's not as if we got rid of Jews, we wouldn't have any problems. We'd still be humans, and, you know, I'm sure in North America and South America, before Columbus came over and before there was any Jews in the Western Hemisphere, the Indians probably – they had their own problems, okay, without Jews. So it's not as if the Jews are responsible for all of our problems, but I do think it's fair to say that the problems that we complain about the most, that we talk about on RBN, the ones that we – for the most part, that we wouldn't be having them, or they wouldn't be nearly as bad if it wasn't for the hijinks and the shenanigans of these Jews. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you're right. And again, as I said earlier, we do have weaknesses that, you know, we need to look in the mirror and address these. You know, there are reasons why, you know, they've come to power. You know, they may be sneaky and subversive, but, you know, now that we've learned that, you know, we got to get strong and, you know, not allow that to happen again. You know, just complaining all the time, like, oh, look at the Jews subvert us. It's like, that's not going to do anything, you know, and they love that. And one thing, going back to what you said about Chris Hedges, about and surely it's not only him, but people that like to blame us, right? And I've even talked to online to a Jewish person that said,
people often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
One thing, going back to what you said about Chris Hedges, about and surely it's not only him, but people that like to blame us, right? And I've even talked to online to a Jewish person that said, like, well, the problems are just the Shabbos Goy, right? They're worse than the Jews because they're selling out your own people. And I guess my thought on that was like, but if we didn't have if we didn't have you Jews trying to buy them out, then they wouldn't be Chabot's coins. Right. Yeah. So ultimately, you are the problem, you know. So anyway, we do need to take responsibility for how they came to power, you know. And that wasn't either of our generations, you know. But you know, we're stuck with the issue again. Like I said, it's either be called names or go extinct. Or
yeah, both. Going thing. I mean, generationally, it's kind of an ongoing thing. It's been steady and ongoing. And yeah, I want to differentiate between what you say about white people and what Chris Hedges say about white people, because you're not like Chris Hedges, and I like Chris Hedges, but he and so many other people just find somebody else to blame the crimes of the Jews on. Okay, and yeah. In his case, he's blaming it on white
people, right? I kind of like it too. I didn't realize that he talked about Jewish issue or in this regard. I've seen, from what I've seen, I know he does a lot of writing about the CIA and stuff, which I kind of find interesting. But yeah, I don't appreciate that at all, really.
He talks about war, and he talked about, in the case of the Gulf War, not the Gulf War, the Iraq War, he listed about 15 names, and 13 of them were Jews. And yeah. Still, it's a military industrial complex and, you know, white supremacy.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's, I do take objection to that. Now, there's other people, and you're pointing out that, well, white people have a certain responsibility for letting ourselves be led astray, letting ourselves be fooled, letting them get away with it. And that's a different thing, you know, to say that we were weak, to say that we have some culpability for being deceived over and over and over again, that's one thing. But to say that the Jews in the State Department and the Jews in the Ukrainian government who started this war in Ukraine, that's white supremacy. I can't abide by. But at any rate, we're pretty much at the end of the show. Do you have any thoughts before we wrap it up?
Well, no, I usually say this, but I'll repeat it. You know, a lot of the stuff we talk about is pretty deep at times, and I would recommend anybody go spend some time in nature, go for a walk in the woods or a walk in the park, and if you have a dog or a pet, you know, take them with you.
That's very good. Yeah. And yeah, once again, I'm going to say this coming Friday, my Friday show will be with Brother Nathaniel. So I'm shilling for Bro Nat. That's what I call him, Bro Nat. So tune in on Friday for Bro Nat, and I'll be back again. Thank you for joining me, Philbert.
Absolutely. And I'll see you next time.
Yes, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Legal Radio.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.com.